everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with our friend Bob Dio. Bob on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our show. Together we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. It is Wednesday, May 30th, 2018. Bob, this was the day traditionally in this country that Memorial Day was celebrated. When I was growing up, back in the dark ages, Memorial Day was May 30th. But that all changed in 1968 when the government decided to go to four-day weekends. We are coming to you live from Tucson's AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice, with live streaming at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com podcasts, and our complete show archive available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. Our live line number is 790-2040. Well, on January 14th, the University of Arizona hired 53-year-old Kevin Sumlin to head up the University of Arizona football team. The hire came less than 2 weeks after Arizona fired Rich Rodriguez amid allegations that he created a hostile work environment. Kevin Sumlin comes to the University of Arizona after head coaching jobs at Texas A&M University and the University of Houston, where he amassed a head coaching record of 86 wins and 43 losses with 7 bowl appearances. Coach Sumlin helped Johnny Manziel win the Heisman Trophy in 2012. Arizona has a very talented quarterback in Khalil Tate, who is expected to thrive in Coach Sumlin's system. Coach Sumlin led A&M to an 11-2 mark in his first season with Manziel, becoming the first redshirt freshman to win the Heisman. Kevin Sumlin was born in Brewton, Alabama. Coach, did I pronounce that right?
That's Brewton.
It's Brewton, okay. Brewton, Alabama, and later attended high school in Indianapolis, where he played football, basketball, and hockey. Following his prep career, Coach Sumlin attended Purdue University, was a starting linebacker for his entire college career. Coach has been in the coaching business, starting as an assistant at Washington State about 30 years ago, and it's a pleasure to welcome you, Coach Sumlin, to the program.
Well, thank you. It's that's a great introduction. You can skip the 53-year-old part, but that's
In my research, you've got a birthday coming up. You're an August Leo, strong Leo rising there.
Yeah, that's correct.
So, hey, enjoy the 53 for a few more weeks. So how's it going? You settling in?
Yeah, it's been good. I mean, the people of Tucson have been just awesome. And, you know, it's been they've made the transition very, very easy for me. I get the two boys haven't moved from College Station yet. They're still in school.
How old are your kids?
Well, I've got one at NYU who's a junior, and one that's at A&M that's a sophomore. Mm-hmm. And I've got one that's a sophomore in high school, and one's an eighth grader. So, you know, I don't ever move them in the middle of the year.
No.
And it's the last week of school in Texas. So I was just back there, just got back late last night and kind of running back and forth. That's the hard part of the transition, but the people of Tucson have been awesome. And I think that it's a general feeling when they say welcome to Tucson. It's made it a lot easier.
Well, it's a very friendly town. I've been here 30 years, and I wouldn't be still here if it wasn't a great place. But no, people really do open their hearts up to newcomers. And I know Coach Tomey being a friend of mine and mm-hmm. a lot of people in this town, he's very welcoming to Tucson. And I know he's spoken very highly of you. Have you gotten to know Coach?
Yeah, I called Coach early in the process and, you know, had met him years before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and really, you know, when I was had accepted the job and really talked to him before I even came here, just about, you know, the lay of the land, and because I have so much respect for how what he's doing now, how he did things here at the university, but you know, and him still being here, he he apologized at the time. He was at an All-Star game in Hawaii. Imagine that. So he wasn't at the press conference, but you know, we were just talking about a couple different things and what was important, and there's more to it than just football. And so, you know, he's got a locker in our coach's locker room right now.
Put that in
there, and if he wants to ever use it and be around, you know, he's welcome anytime.
You know, the thing I admired so much about Coach Tomey with the program, and some would call this Coach Sumlin kind of the glory days with Desert Swarm and everything, it really wasn't all about winning with Coach Tomey. He was a career builder for mm-hmm. young men, and it was about not academics, it was about building fine people.
Right.
I think that's kind of the way I put it.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people have that hope for you. And I know I've spoken with the university president. He has that hope for you.
That's right. And I think, you know, that's part of why I came here. I wasn't going to do anything this year. Probably take a year off based on mm-hmm. everything that happened last year. It was, you know, with just a lot of drama, a lot of different things. And it really boiled down to our administration and what Dr. Robbins had as a vision, what Dave Hickey had as a vision, and their seriousness about, you know, not just football, but about growing young men, about the whole university. And I'd been here a couple times to visit Rich and to visit even Mike. You know, I worked at Oklahoma for 5 years.
Right, I know that.
And it's just a beautiful, beautiful place. And so, you know, it was one of those things where I just felt it was the right fit for me mm-hmm. at the right time, mm-hmm. Based on our leadership. And you know, and that's important. I mean, when we sit down and recruit young men, we don't just talk about football, but you know, development of young men to men, you know, what does that look like? It's growth academically, it's growth spiritually, it's growth with awareness, which is completely different than a lot of different things that we try to teach in football. And mm-hmm. so we're trying to grow the complete young man into a man and take what parents have done, some single parents, some no parents, some two parents,
right.
and grow them from where they are at 17, 18 year olds to, you know, 22, 23 year olds. And that's a challenge.
Cookie cutter approach doesn't work, as you know, Coach Sumlin, because each of these young men are going to come to the University of Arizona. They're going to bring a different skill set, not just a football skill set. They're talking about different gifts in life. We all have gifts,
right.
And each of those young men are going to have to develop those gifts, and they come from so many different backgrounds.
That's correct. And you know, what we have to do is, you know, assemble a team, but also be aware of each individual. And, you know, it's everybody's got different backgrounds, as I was saying, and respect that. But, hey, look, here's the end game. Here's where we're going to be 4 or 5 years from now, mm-hmm. but these are the steps it takes, and there's a lot of people involved in that process.
Yeah, and you've had to put together a whole staff.
Yeah,
that's a huge undertaking.
Well, it is.
And you know, then the spring football came as you mm-hmm. were kind of still assembling a work in progress.
Right, and that's the tough part is in this business, you know, that what you first have to do is realize that, you know, this was the first job, first time that really that any this has happened, where it was the first year of early signing date.
Mm-hmm.
So there were 16 or 17 players signed on December 15th, before a month before I got there, and a team that was in there that none of those guys signed up for me. Right, so you've got to realize that,
yeah.
And then, you know, for me and for our staff, it was imperative that we began to create trust before anything, because I strongly believe that, you know, with trust, growth happens quicker. And that seems easy to do, but you know, when you have 90 guys in there that don't even know who you are, didn't come here to see you, you know, you got to work at that. And so that was the hard part for us.
All right, Coach, we're going to take a break right here. Coach Sumlin will stick around. We want to talk a little bit about his early career and how he really wound up in football. And we're going to take a deep dive into Coach Kevin Sumlin's the early days and how he even wound up in coaching here on the Buckmaster Show. But I want to tell our listeners about my favorite bakery in town, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located. You kind of know a Kringle, don't you?
Huh? I know what it is. Yes.
You know what it is. Yeah. So many people, you know, those of us who grew up in the Midwest, I'm right. Chicago area guy, and you spent time certainly in Indiana. And I mean, the Danish Kringle, you'll find them at bakeries in the Midwest.
It was big in Minnesota.
It was.
In Minnesota.
Real big, yeah. So anyway, Steve and Sherry, the owners of Mona's Danish Bakery, do a terrific Danish Kringle. And of course, their baked breads are wonderful. It is lunch hour. Stop by and see them at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Coach, you might want to stop by.
Yeah, Mona's, sounds great.
Mona's Danish Bakery. You can find out more about them by going to my website, buckmastershow.com. There's a link not only to Mona's, but all of the fine partners, the people who make this show possible at buckmastershow.com. We'll be right back with Kevin Sumlin. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com.
With spring in the air, summer will be here before you know it. At Bon Voyage Travel, we want to help you stay cool through the hot summer months, and there's no better way than a Holland America cruise to Alaska. There are hundreds of dates and itineraries to create your perfect Alaska vacation. Why not add a Rocky Mountaineer train journey while you're there to explore all of North America? Call Bon Voyage Travel today at 797-1110 or visit bvtravel.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Thank you.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Join us on Thursday during the noon hour for a newsmaker interview with the number two elected official in the state of Arizona, Secretary of State Michelle Reagan. Plus, City Councilman Paul Durham will join us. Buckmaster, noon to 1 on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice, worldwide live listening, buckmastershow.com. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Kevin Sumlin is with us. Kevin is the head football coach at the University of Arizona. Kevin, did you have dreams of playing college football? I know you played, played basketball. I shouldn't say gave it up. No. Well, you kind of had to give it up.
Well, when you're in Indiana, you know.
Yeah. Indiana, you play basketball,
that's
right?
That's what you do.
Yeah. So your dad was a high school vice president. Was that in Alabama, or did the family move? How did you wind up in Indianapolis?
Well, he was a coach when I was young. And through the 60s, it was in Bruton's in what we call L.A., Lower Alabama. So about 8 miles from the Florida line.
I didn't know there was another L.A. Now I know.
Yeah, okay. Well, down there is. And it was, you know, that was kind of a difficult time.
Yeah.
And so we moved to Bloomington, Indiana, where he went to get a master's degree, lived in married student housing there, and then he moved from coaching football to administration and moved to Indianapolis. And so it was really a different situation for me, because in Alabama, it's all about football. And in Indiana, it's all about basketball. And started playing basketball
Were you a pretty good basketball player?
I was pretty good.
Yeah. But what position?
When you're 6'1", there's only a few things you can do.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, and because of that, basketball was not a future for me, and playing football was. And I had several opportunities to go to some other schools, but I just...
They would have been Division II?
No, there was a couple others, but they were a little further away.
Okay, but when it came to football, what about opportunities?
Yeah.
That would have been Division II, perhaps.
Yeah, no, not okay. necessarily. But
I don't want to sell you short.
No,
here.
All right. I just be honest with you, yeah. I like the coaches at Purdue.
Mm-hmm. Who was your coach at that time?
Leon Burtonet.
Okay.
And then there was a guy that ran some camps and was the head coach of another high school that they had hired at Purdue at the time. And he said, you know, basically this guy can play for us. And kind of promised me that down the road you'd get a scholarship and things worked out.
So if you basically did some weightlifting, some intensive weightlifting, right?
Yeah, I
understand you were about 178, something like that.
185,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, to play linebacker in the Big Ten, you got to get tough, man.
Yeah. I was playing basketball.
Yeah.
And I say this all the time. I'm always looking for dual or triple sport athletes. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing what happens when a guy that's playing year-round really settles down and with our development program, when you're talking about nutrition, you're talking about weightlifting, you're talking about strength and conditioning, and eliminates a couple sports, and that's what he gets to. You know, how quickly a young man will just, as we, for lack of a better term, fill out. I mean, because he's been playing year-round.
Of course.
And different sports, and whether that's, and particularly in basketball, where it's a different muscle set. So, but guys that play year round, their hand-eye coordination, everything else is, there's things that are innately, whether you're in the blocks and you're competing, whether you're playing baseball and you get to the plate, it's on you. It's not,
right.
You've got to do it yourself. And so I'm all about those guys who are competing year round.
You were a walk-on then at Purdue. Is there a place still for walk-ons in big-time college football?
There's no doubt. I mean, just look at who won the Heisman this year. And Baker Mayfield was a walk-on. And so, yeah. You know, there's with everything that's out there and all the people that are recruiting, I say all the time, you know, and I try to give a scholarship at least one, maybe two a year to guys who come in and with those skill sets and they're there and they're paying their own way, that are doing things that for the love of the game. And those guys, they may lack something somewhere, but the one thing they're not going to do is quit. And you can work with that all the time.
I looked at the schedule. You've got a interesting schedule. You've got 7 home games, which is always, I think, kind of an advantage going right in. I mean, you've got 7 home, and you've got 5 away. I think that Houston matchup is going to be interesting. BYU cannot be taken lightly the first game of the season.
No.
And so they'll have a lot of fans. They always travel real well. They'll bring a lot of fans to Tucson. But then
have good players.
Yeah, they have good players. Always have. I mean, it's really solid. And then you're going to go back to Houston, to Cougarland. That's going to be an interesting kind of matchup.
Yeah, it was. I was speaking there last week.
I heard that at
the Houston Touchdown.
I heard you
club.
Went back there to speak.
Yeah, I said I might be the first coach and football coach in America. Kind of like Tom Landry, you know how he used to wear the hat? Well, I might adapt the baseball coach's deal and just wear a uniform back in there, helmet and shoulder pads, because it's going to be rough.
Yeah, it will be rough. Of course, Pac-10 football, or Pac-12, I'm still going back to Pac-10, but Pac-12 schedule is always tough. You never know what to expect. But I think a lot of attention to this team will be focused on Khalil Tate, and you know, certainly a Heisman Trophy candidate. But football is more than one guy.
That's right. And
team sport.
Well, yeah. I say this all the time. He's a dynamic player.
Yeah.
But he's really started only 8 games. You know, he was the backup quarterback last year coming to the season.
Yeah.
And a lot's been heaped on him. Is he capable of that? Yeah. He's got to continue to grow, but
stay healthy.
There's 10 other guys on the field and when he's out there and our coaching staff. So what we have to do is make our offense quarterback friendly for him, push him to where he is getting better, but also do the things that he does well. But it's up to those 10 other guys also to win games.
It is.
It's
one guy does not make a team.
That's right.
Let's see if we can work a quick call in here, Coach.
Oh, okay.
Slip those on the headset there for me.
All right.
Judith has called us with a question for Coach Kevin Sumlin. Go ahead, Judith.
Welcome to Tucson, Coach, and welcome to the Wildcat family. I know you did a lot of good work in Houston. I moved here from Houston. Dr. Robbins, President Robbins, moved here from Houston.
Yep.
Houston. I not only admire and respect your resume that Bill profoundly gave, but what really impressed me was your college major. Given the inappropriate activity at McHale and the athletic department, your major was criminal justice. And that speaks volumes of you, sir. I so admire and respect you. If you hadn't gone the coaching route, what was your intention to do with that major?
Good question.
That's a good question.
Thank you, Judy.
Before I was... a coach. I was in private business. The goal was to go to law school and become a trial lawyer, to be honest with you, and which is a different kind of arena. But I ended up in between. There was a guy who kind of took a liking to me and doing all kinds of press conferences and things like this. Come down here. I run this insurance company, and I'm going to put you in this management program. I was a group insurance underwriter for about a year and a half.
Wow.
I did not know that. It's really kind of an interesting deal, because you're the in-between the actuaries who set the rate and then the salesmen who are really on the ground who are trying to sell it. And then in the late 80s, that's when things kind of went through the roof. And it was small groups. And so you're trying to help both people out. You're trying to keep the salesman happy and the groups happy with the rates. And then the actuaries are just there to try to make they're setting the rates. They just want money. So you're the guy that's kind of in between that. Yeah. And when you're 23 years old and you walk in an office and there's guys there that are, you know, been there 10, 15, 20 years and you're managing the office, there's a little tension involved in that too.
So, well, that's an interesting departure from football,
yeah.
Right?
I think it had to do with there's a guy named Jerry Simler who ran this place, mm-hmm. It also helped that he had six kids go to Purdue. So
go.
He came to every football game. Yeah. But for me, I think he saw something in me that, making decisions and doing things like that and being at a time where only one guy could come. The whole team couldn't come to the sideline. One guy came to the sideline back in those days and went back and talked to the team on the field. And, you know, he said, you're the right guy for this job. Don't let these guys bother you. But to back to her question about criminal justice, yeah, that's a big deal. And you know, we do a lot of things in our program from a communication standpoint that we bring in people that have nothing to do with football, just to talk about life. Some guys with success stories that come from nothing or from some hard times, and also some guys that were at a certain level that situations that they put themselves in brought them to the lowest point in their life. And I think guys need to hear all that all the time.
All right, Kevin Sumlin, out of time, but a quick question for you. Thing in your career and your life that you're most proud of?
I think the success of my children, and you know what they're doing right now, and having those opportunities, I think is probably the biggest part of my life, the thing that I'm most proud of, because of, you know, where I'm from and having two kids in college already and they're doing what they want to do. You know, one's in theater at NYU.
Which is
kind of hard to get into Tisch, you know.
Yeah.
And then one's in the Mays Business School at A&M, and the two boys are going to be fine. And you know, those are the things that I think at the end of the day are the things that really matter in life.
Kevin Sumlin, a pleasure to meet you, and hope to have you back soon, and best of luck to you.
All right. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks a lot. Kevin Sumlin with us on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be right back. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in TUS. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine in a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques? It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Zocalo, located near the corner of Country Club and Broadway, is moving to a new location on 13 acres over at Green Things. That's going to be a terrific marriage. Green Things over on River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Here's the good news. All that Zocalo merchandise, the great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America, it's all available at a heavily discounted pre-moving sale before they move over to River Road. So check it out, Zocalo, near the corner of Country Club and Broadway. Let's welcome now one of two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Ken Scoville is with us, historian. Happy birthday, Ken. A couple of days late, but still happy birthday.
Thank you very much. I normally try and keep it a secret.
I know, but now the whole world knows.
Yeah, who knew if Facebook did that?
I know. I just Facebook recently did had it. It was all over Facebook. That was Ken Scoville's birthday. Didn't say how old, and we won't talk about that.
I did have a moment of silence, though, with it.
May is still with us for a couple more days, so we can certainly talk about National Preservation Month. Has Tucson done a pretty good job, or we have a mixed bag?
Oh, like every city. I travel around the United States and look at historic places. We have a mixed bag, but like everything else, and I tell visitors when I'm doing a tour, just by sort of dumb luck and citizen activists, we do still have things to represent every era in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And we have still quite a few landmarks, and we're going to talk a little bit about some mm-hmm. landmarks in the news right now. But you can really, and again, from more of an academic standpoint, you can discover all the cultural layers for the last 1,000 years, 2,000 years. They're still here in Tucson. So the story's unbroken.
Well, the Benedictine Monastery is front page news about the future of that. Mistakes made, in your opinion, about not getting that more of a... I know there was some kind of a historic designation, but that's not ironclad.
No. The way this worked, and it's interesting that I was an inside player on this, before the property ever reached the market, Damian Klinko and I and other people from the Historic Preservation Foundation approached the advisory group that advises the nuns. And that we... said this needs really a historic landmark designation, and they weren't interested. And I lobbied them several times.
When was that? Do you recall how many years ago?
No, that was like last fall. It's been almost a year coming up last fall. We knew that this was they were moving, the nuns were moving, and this was going to change.
But they said they weren't interested?
They were not interested in having a historic landmark designation.
That's curious.
Well, they're either two, you know, you can take the, well, maybe they were just ignored or didn't think it was that big a deal, or maybe there were some other motivations. Mm-hmm. But we all knew this was going to happen.
What could that have done, the designation?
Well, then whoever bought it and whatever they would have proposed, the idea that you could tear the building down would be out of play.
Wow.
And that would have not had all the crisis and all the issues that we're having mm-hmm. now.
Well, you've seen the design, I assume.
Oh, I was at the meeting.
You were at the meeting. What do you think of the seven-story kind of?
Well, it's one of those things.
Enclosed on all three of the four sides of the building.
Well, the good news is the building, the monastery, would still be there.
Right.
I mean, and versus it vanishing. The bad news is that it's really out of place for the neighborhood mm-hmm. and the context and all of those things. But it's sort of Tucson. You know, the best we can offer is you save the building, and then it's wrapped around in three sides by probably out of scale. I'll try and be a little bit, because at least they're saving the building. But now, since the council's made this move to designate it as a landmark, we may see a court case out of it, and it may go to the state Supreme Court. Who knows?
What have we done right in historic preservation?
Well, I think what was pivotal is when we established the National Register of Historic Districts after urban renewal in the early 1970s, El Presidio, mm-hmm. Barrio Historico, Armory Park, and later on Fort
Wall. Without that, we would have...
Oh, because then it would have been just piecemeal, chip away at each house. And that was purely citizen initiative and just hard, hard battles to establish those districts.
The Marist College, you're very high on what has been done on that.
Marist is at the other end of what the Benedictine Monastery is just starting at. 25 years of advocating, along with many others, this is a landmark three-story building, actually a concrete, reinforced concrete basement, and then three upper stories, and all out of sun-dried adobe blocks. 1915, it was Manuel Flores was the designer, and the bishop at that time was Henry Granyon. And essentially, it's a wonderful combination of Italian Renaissance and Spanish Colonial Revival. And like so many things, the diocese moved in there after it closed as a school, had it for offices, and it closed it, didn't maintain it. The water ponded on the roof and seeped into the corners. All the corners are collapsing. They hold it up with steel girders. And then 20 years of meetings and discussions, and finally, it's really close to being finished, and it's going to have a great use as providing low-income senior housing for 8 apartments in there. The basement is just spectacular with all the windows now. So it is being saved.
So that's good news story.
That's good news. And it should probably get an historic landmark designation. It's that significant to be that late in our adobe era of multi-stories. It was also one time the only school in Arizona that was open to all students.
Wow, I did not know that. Bad news through the years, the El Conquistador Hotel.
El Conquistador Hotel is our Penn Station. It's one of those because people don't realize the monastery and the architecture of the El Con Hotel was the same kind of architectural mm-hmm, style. Mm-hmm.
But that's a touchstone of what didn't go right.
Right. That's a classic. It's a poster child of what didn't go right.
Yeah. But generally, this community is pretty much on board with historic preservation.
Is that
generous?
Well, it depends which community you're talking
to. Okay.
Real estate community, not so much. I think they're finally, especially downtown, they're realizing the amazing value it is.
Yes,
and
downtown,
leasable thing
for sure.
To see this. And hopefully that will spill out. I think Miracle Mile's starting to see this with the Ghost Ranch Lodge and other adaptive reuses.
Broadway,
that was a big battle, and that's still not completely over with. But once people see the economic value, the reason I'm in it, among everything else, is that's the way we really should learn history, to see the historic places. You know, you can talk about the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, but go to Independence Hall, and you get a different feel for it.
Well, and you wrote a book about historic places.
Right.
You want to do a quick plug on that?
I'm writing my second book. It's probably as good a thing as a plug of the first book. It's going to be Teaching U.S. History and Civics. Is It Too Late? Mm. We've abandoned those things in elementary school completely.
Unfortunately,
we have. It's just gone in elementary school. So.
Kent Scoville, the Buckmaster Show historian with us. We've got a minute or so left, Ken. So how do you think this will all play out with the Benedictine monastery? Is the ball in the court of the council or the developer, or where is it?
Well, I think the ball is really in the court of the building itself.
Okay.
You can't drive by that and say, you can't tear that down. Mm-hmm. It's just a glorious building. It ties in with our Spanish.
But you don't think there's a danger of tearing it down?
Oh, there is, but what this has become, it's become so public and so politicized, and rightly, that I think the council is going to go ahead with the designation. Mm-hmm. I think it will go to a court case, but I think they're going to rule in favor of it. But it's, and I would hope the current developer is going to say, I just got to revisit this. How can I still make this work?
How
economic,
do I still make some money?
Economic for me.
But maybe not build seven stories, right? I mean, how do I still make some money on the deal?
But this is going to be a landmark, bad pun here, landmark decision about this, but also the idea of landmark status, because National Register does not preserve the building.
No.
There's tax benefits and other things, but the landmarks designation would really preserve the building.
But you think this could eventually go to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, at least the state Supreme Court.
About the future of historic designations and what does that really entail in the long run.
Right, because there is a state law right now that the legislature has had for quite a while about illegal taking of somebody's value of the mm-hmm. land. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those preservation issues go into that. People might think this may be our local landmark decision, bad pun that I'd been, just like Grand Central Station went all the way to the Supreme Court. We
I
almost lost Grand
that.
Central Station, but finally the U.S. Supreme Court cited that it was not an economic taking by keeping the train
station. So it was almost torn down?
Yes. Oh. Do you know, if you've ever been to Radio City Music Hall, that was 3 weeks from demolition.
Oh, my goodness.
Radio City Music
Hall. Did not know that either. I always learn something here from not only Ken Scoville. The reason I do this program is to learn something every day. So, Ken Scoville, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
Thanks very much.
All right. We'll take our break right here. It's the Buckmaster Show coming up on 1246. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for 6 new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with a business they trust. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that thousands of consumers go to tucson.bbb.org every week to inquire about trustworthy businesses. Is your business accredited with BBB? To find out more, call Celeste Angelini at 520-345-5837 or go to tucson.bbb.org and remember to always start with trust.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Busy hour here on the Buckmaster Show. We always try to put as much content in 1 hour as humanly possible, and I think we do a pretty good job of that. Dr. Robert Hendricks is with us. He is the contributor on the Buckmaster Show on education. Dr. Hendricks, Associate Professor Emeritus at the UA College of Education, former superintendent at Flowing Wells School District. Dr. Hendricks, Bob, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill.
This is our first visit, really, since the whole Red for Ed thing. Can you give us sort of an overview on some of your thoughts? Were they successful in what started, I think, over 6 weeks and then culminated with the legislature taking action?
Yeah, I would say I would give it a measured A+. I think the effort on the part of the teachers in terms of their unification and the fact that they brought along a lot of support from parents and the community resulted in some very positive indicators for them. But I'm certainly glad that it didn't last any longer than it did.
Well, the public support, I think, was starting to erode a little bit.
I would have predicted that.
Yeah.
I would say, when you started to move into week two, I started to hear more grumblings.
Right.
And people were beginning to wonder, what are we going to do? It turned from support to inconvenience.
Right.
And I think when you reach that point, I was glad that it was coming close to the end. And the legislature always does things in the 11th hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I was glad that that 11th hour occurred, by the end of that second week, because had it gone any further than that, I think everyone would have been in a state of anger and turmoil.
Well, we'll have to see how it all plays out, that 19 or 20% over the couple of years. We'll see. I spoke with State Senator Steve Smith on the show yesterday, and he said, oh, yeah, that's guaranteed. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I haven't seen any evidence of guarantees in the future. Hopefully it will happen. And, we certainly have, the best indication is past performance, and it hasn't been good. But let's hope that there's a turn for the best there.
Summer is here, and the students, many of the students are out for the summer. Summer learning, is year-round schooling still something that is more of an anomaly?
It is an anomaly. It's interesting because students and certainly teachers and many parents consider it summer break. But when you look at the research, it's really more of a summer slide, because we see some significant gaps in learning, during that two-month period when students are out of school. Most states have 180 instructional days, so it stands to reason that there is going to be that period of time. Some districts have tried to sort that out in a little different way and make the summer shorter and give more measured breaks during the course of the year, perhaps to address some of this learning gap issue.
But that really hasn't caught on in
it has not.
No.
It has not. And the gap is particularly large, Bill, for lower income students. What we found in one major study is that students lost at least a month in math skills, and students who are from lower income families lost an average of 2.6 months of math skills. Now, we don't see that as much in reading, and the suggestion is that when students get involved in a pattern of reading, the quest for reading continues during the summer. It becomes reading becomes a recreational activity.
And where doing math problems would not be a recreational activity.
No, so in fact, it's practiced less and, you know, less and less, and there's a quicker decline. So it stands to reason logically that math skills would be on the decline, whereas reading skills tend to level out a little bit more. But I think probably the major reasons that we haven't seen any changes over the decades, and certainly people have talked about this for many, many years, is the lack of funding support. And that always is the number one reason that we give for lack of doing anything in the educational enterprise. But there really are other obstacles too, and certainly one that's related to funding is that many schools across the country still lack air conditioning.
Really?
And yes, and that's, you know, we think about it here in Tucson, and we say, well, how could we survive in an enterprise that didn't have air conditioning? But when you look at other parts of the country where there's high humidity and heat waves, that's a big problem. And so it's the lack of air conditioning, and it's the lack of dollars to support the utility expenses that go with that as well.
Can you take a quick call? We have Ingrid would like to add to the conversation about the long summer break. Ingrid, go ahead.
Yes, you pretty much answered my question. I was going to say, what's getting in the way of the extended school year? I personally designed a whole schedule for that so that students wouldn't forget what they learned and so on and so forth. But you brought up some very interesting things about the utility expenses and so forth. Somehow, though, I think that we need to pay for that so that our students benefit and not lose what they've gained. It seems to be a waste.
I agree, Ingrid. Yeah. But, you know, there's another pushback that I think we don't talk about quite as much, but it's an economic one, and it's really underlying in our culture. And so when you look at industries that depend on summer, travel, camping, sports, theme parks, I mean, there are districts who have tried to make some changes, and they've really gotten some resistance from these industries because they really thrive on
the family summer vacation.
Exactly, exactly. And then there's also the argument, particularly to secondary school level, that students have, it's their only opportunity for employment.
For the summer jobs.
Exactly, exactly. Huh. So
that's interesting.
There are those issues as well, besides the funding, which I think really affect the entire fabric of what are we going to do to extend summer.
But the summer break, Bob Hendricks, was historically about to work on the farm, wasn't it?
You
know, isn't that kind of the way that all...
That's actually a myth.
It is. Okay,
yes.
Good.
And
debunk it.
I actually have... I've perpetuated that myth myself, but it's not actually true because if you look at the agrarian calendar, it was mostly spring planting and fall.
Fall harvest.
It wasn't the summer.
Wow.
And so really the changes began in the cities, the large cities, New York City, for example, where families wanted to leave for the summer because of the sweltering heat.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really more of a climate thing than a labor-driven thing. And again, I'm happy to debunk that myth because I've always thought that too. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've read that in the literature, but it's just not true.
And it gets back, you brought up about the summer and the vacation. I had not thought about the economic impact that the big, you know, Disney World and all these places that and the travel industry.
Absolutely.
How they depend on summer. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, some districts have attempted to run summer programs.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that really seem to work best based on the research are ones that are extended, and they really use a line of about 5 weeks that are necessary for an effective program. And it's got to be driven towards specific skills rather than, you know, a play recreational time. And so Some students, some parents may find that more punitive, but the reality is that that can greatly enhance the learning experience.
All right, Bob Hendricks, always a pleasure. We will talk to you in June and see how your summer is going.
Right. Thank
All right. You. Thank you very much. Coming up, we've got Mike Shaw's show this afternoon. Mike from 4 to 6, and then Wake Up Tucson 6 to 9. Me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you tomorrow. Our guest will be Michelle Reagan. Michelle is the Secretary of State for Arizona, the second highest elected official in the state. Also, Paul Durham will be our guest. Paul is a Tucson City Councilman, and we'll have both of them on the program. Until then, on behalf of Bob Dio, my engineer producer, thank you, Bob, and on behalf of Dr. Bob Hendricks with me in studio, we hope you have a great afternoon and evening.